Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to talk to three winners from the Future Writers and Illustrators. Anyways, Writers of the Future and Illustrators. And I'm never sure where to put the illustrator in. Kaya Camber, you're the illustrator.
Hello.
Hi, Christoph. Hi, JW.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. It shows you that even somebody who's been doing it for a while can really mess up. Why don't each of you tell a little bit about yourself and how you came to the awards? I'm going to call your name and you just answer. Why don't we start with Camber?
So I was just looking for different opportunities for, money and, exposure and things like that, because I was going to go to college. So, and my mom, she was like, oh, this seems like a cool thing to apply to. So I did, and I didn't get in the first time, but I applied again with some more, sci-fi pieces, and I got in. So it was really exciting, and I don't think I realized the gravity of the event itself. I think I was just sort of applying, and, yep, here I am.
Cool. Christoph?
I heard about the contest. I was trying to improve my writing, and I had, somebody had recommended a book by Orson Scott Card, kind of a book on writing, on the technical side of it, and he's one of my favorite authors, and he happens to be a judge, and in the book he had recommended the contest. So that was where I had first heard about it, and I checked it out. I entered, and I was pleasantly surprised on my second entry to win third place in my quarter.
Amazing. JW?
Yeah, I first heard about the contest from an author called Pat, wrote a book called The Naked Droid, and a website that he had been a winner, and that's how he got his agent. And this was when I first started for, and I entered once and I got a rejection and I was discouraged and I didn't enter again and I didn't really know what I was doing back then anyway. And then I entered again after I'd worked on my craft for a couple of years, and that was my second entry and I won first place in my quarter.
That's interesting. So most of you guys had to apply a second time. How did you feel about when you didn't make it the first time? Were you discouraged? And who encouraged you to try a second time? Did you do it yourself, or did someone else encourage you?
I can say I didn't have too long of a road. I've gotten a lot of rejections other places, but for some reason the judges in this contest seemed to like my writing, because my first entry was a finalist, so I was in the top eight, and I knew that, you know, how many entrants there are, and so that was encouraging for me. So it wasn't like I didn't feel very rejected, even though I didn't win, because I knew I was close. So I wanted to try again. So for me, it was I think I just happened my writing happened to click with the judges in those quarters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Camber, go first.
Okay.
Okay, well, so I got rejected, and it was weird because, the pieces that I put in the first time I personally felt were better than the ones that I put in that won. And I actually, I sort of like the ones that won, but I don't like them as much as my other work. But my dad was the one who suggested I submit them because he said they were more in line with, the whole fantasy, sci-fi theme, and he's like, even if you don't like them as much, they're more likely to win, because that's what the judges want to see. So I was like, all right, and so I submitted it the second time, and I actually got in, and I probably wouldn't have done it without my dad, so.
Hmm. that's great. I can relate to that. My dad was very encouraging to me, too. Okay. And it was, who was it left out? It was Chris, no, it was JW, right? You were trying to talk. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I said I was a little discouraged when I first entered. I was still very new back then. I was a beginning writer, didn't know anything, and I hadn't started submitting short fiction at all back then. And so in a period of time between then and when I won, I just got used to, like Christoph mentioned, getting rejected. You know, that's just what you do as a writer. You send stuff out and you get a lot of rejections. You get way more rejections than you do. Except by the time I'd won, I had already some stories, so I was more confident in my craft. And actually, the reason I entered again is because I was going to be qualified if I'd made one more pro sale, because you know this contest is for new writers. So if you make more than three pro sales, then you're no longer eligible for the contest. And I saw that I was about to become ineligible, and so again, and one, and I did, because I made another pro sale right after that, so I would have been ineligible if I hadn't entered right when I did.
That's interesting. It's all timing, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think too with the quarters, the judges change. I think the coordinating judge is the same, but some of the others are different. So, you know, a story that might have won in one quarter with another set of judges that maybe like, say, futuristic science fiction might not do as well in another quarter where the judges have kind of a preference for, say, something in another style or genre. So, yeah, timing, I would say, is definitely a part of it.
I have a question because I've been thinking about it as a science fiction fan and fantasy fan. Have you guys noticed how dark science fiction has gotten in the last couple of years?
Yeah.
And do you like that trend, or do you feel it's gone a little too far?
I would say that in moderation, it's good. I think one of the things science fiction does well is to warn about the future, about, you know, places that we might be headed with certain technologies, you know, if they're not used. You know, I think technology is great. We were kind of talking about this earlier. But it's great in that it can make our lives easier, but it has to be, I think you have to think about it beforehand. You know, they say to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And I think that's what science fiction does well. But you're right. It seems like almost people have gotten pessimistic, writers, because a lot of what I see now is really dark, and there are some dark things going on, I would definitely like to see more visions of, you know, a positive future about ideas that we can make.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that. Yeah. Well, something I have a problem with, like, in terms of, like, visuals, like, there's recently been a lot of, like, gritty reboots of, like, different shows, like gritty reboot of, I don't know, like Beauty and the Beast or like whatever, and they usually take like the style, like, you know, normally the style is like very colorful and has like, you know, strong shapes, and like they take it and they make it like darker, and like, I don't know, like they just darken everything, and it really bothers me because I feel like it's almost like a really unoriginal trend that everyone kind of follows because I guess it's supposed to be cool, like The Hobbit. And,
I wish I could high-five you right now, Camber, because I so agree with you.
Yeah, no, I hate it. I hate it. And, like, all my favorite, like, games and, like, comics and everything, they have a lot of color and shapes and, like, just I like that strong, like, visual language. I do not like the realistic stuff. So, yeah.
Yep.
Do not like that.
Yeah, I think if I remember, Camber, your illustration was probably the happiest looking in the collection. With all the colors, it was the most colorful.
Thank you. Yeah,
my favorite is the one with the panda bear.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Because, like, yeah. Well, there's a scene in the story. It was, like, an explosion of the sun. Or, no, the earth. And it was, like, a big, like, aura around it that was, like, all colorful. And I was like, oh, I really like that image. So I definitely went a little crazy with the colors. But, yeah. Color is great.
I have an issue with that, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree about the gritty reboots. I really hate that trend. I don't mind dark mm-hmm. fiction in general as long as it's original. A lot of my stuff is dark, but, and yeah, I don't know what that is. It's true. When you read, like, Golden Age science fiction, it's all optimistic and hopeful, mm-hmm. and it's all about what humans mm-hmm. can achieve, and it's true. We do seem to have gotten a lot more pessimistic. Me too. I'm guilty of it. A lot of my stories are dark.
Yeah, and if you think about it, they were going through the Un-American Activities Committee, and they were going through World War II and Korean War. It's not exactly happy-go-lucky time period that those stories were written in, but they were Ray Bradbury, A.E. Van Vogt, Asimov. They were all very positive.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if it has to do with the way the nature of just telling these stories has changed, because another difference is, you know, in the golden age of science fiction, you saw a lot more grand idea stories, whereas nowadays most stories
yeah.
are very character oriented, and that might have to do with the darkening of the fiction, because character conflict is usually, you know, it's about the inner conflict of someone. It's about throwing adversity at a character and watching them overcome it, and sometimes that can make for just beating a character up and putting them through the ringer. And sometimes you'll get a story that's really dark and then there's just a glimmer of hope at the end, you know, or sometimes you don't
get
that.
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, that's life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that. I have
yeah.
a problem with it that every show, it ends in apocalypse, or we've already had an apocalypse and we're trying to get through the apocalypse, and I'm like, a little glimmer of happiness and hope, you know, because if you don't have that in your stories, what's the use?
Right.
Well, I think it's like, I personally also really like dark stories, but it's more like being dark just to be dark. Like, it's cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my problem, yeah, I have a real problem with
yeah.
that. Yeah.
It's like, if you don't have a reason, then it's just pointless. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Because then there's no humanity to it. It's just it's a concept story instead of a story about people, and who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder, too, if James was talking about, you know, Golden Age science fiction, and I wonder, too, if the reason that things tended to be more positive then, as far as stories go, might just have something to do with, you know, the zeitgeist with going into space then. It's such a new frontier, and that was the big scientific engineering challenge of the day, and everybody was pulling for this new human achievement. And we don't have that same excitement about space exploration anymore, because
mm-hmm.
it's kind of like, well, we've gone off Earth, and I think maybe when we start sending people to Mars, we'll see a bunch of really exciting kind of positive stories. But it seems like now the main issues that I see written about a lot are, you know, climate fiction and genetic engineering, at least with what I tend
yeah.
to read. And you know, I think there's a lot of the possible futures that those lead to are darker than, you know, when people were trying to go to the moon. It's, yeah, there were some people that said, oh, yeah, we'll find aliens on there and they'll come destroy Earth or something. But generally
yeah.
it was much more positive and optimistic than, and maybe it just has something to do with the scientific issues of the time.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying. But Bradbury was almost all Earthbound stories. There was very few space stories, and his was all positive.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, other than, like, the Martian Chronicles. But, yeah, like Fahrenheit 451, what else, Dandelion Wine. Yeah, he tended to write more grounded.
About
kind of.
Humans, about here.
Right, right.
Maybe they were in the future, but they were still, it was Earthbound. You know what I'm saying? But I see what you're saying. I mean, the problem is that because of the economy and the worldwide politics and stuff like that, and we didn't go on to other places when we could have, when we were supposed to be, Reagan turned it into a platform to shoot out at the Russians instead of, like, going to the platform to go to the next planet. You know, that's one of the reasons that people are a little hopeless, because it doesn't look like any space exploration except by mechanics are going to be happening. I mean, and I think that's sad. I know that that's one of the things Buzz Aldrin said. He goes, we could have gone so many times, and we never did. We didn't do anything with all of the technology and abilities we had. And I think that's sad.
Yeah, I think that's why Mars One was such a big hit, like, because, you know, NASA isn't really been thinking about space travel that much, and then Mars One comes along, and everyone's like, oh, this is still an opportunity, and it kind of kicked NASA a little and saying, like, oh, well, maybe we should actually, like, do this. Because, you know, we had, like, the space race, and I think that was a big motivator for wanting to go to the moon. So hopefully we'll have another sort of space race go on. And I think that would make people a lot more hopeful.
Yeah. I mean, well, that was John Kennedy's vision. I mean, it took a while from the time John said it in his inaugural speech, but we did it.
Yeah.
I think it's too bad that our scientific progress is so tied into politics, and it always has been. One of the reasons the space race was so successful was because we had political rivals. So they were so willing to just dump money in the space program and get there before the Russians. And we don't really have that anymore, at least not in that direction anymore.
Yeah,
so
totally.
It's really depressing when you see a presidential administration change, and then suddenly the budgets change and NASA's goalposts change because everyone has their own idea of what we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that there was a way of divorcing our scientific and engineering goals from politics.
Political goals. Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you look at the history of any kind of scientific, it always seems to be hooked. Any positive thing comes from negative stuff. It's sort of sad to me. I mean, how many discoveries have been made for war? I mean, how many medical discoveries, how many scientific discoveries have come from war? I wish that we could use all of that knowledge and ability and technology for good and stop trying to hurt each other.
Yeah.
I agree.
I agree too. And I was just thinking about, you know, it seems to me that human genetic engineering could be the new space race in a way, but it maybe doesn't have the same military applications as, say, satellites and rockets. But it seems that, like, there could be a positive future where countries are racing to develop techniques, you know, using CRISPR or some of these new techniques to, you know, eliminate everything from Huntington's to muscular dystrophy. I mean, there's pretty much any genetic disease. It seems plausible that we could eliminate those, and I'm almost surprised that there isn't a space race kind of competition going on to do this. That there's not like a national pride involved in this.
And the other thing is that people do not realize, and they should, is that a lot of the technology that we have, including the things we're talking on, like cell phones and things, came from the space travels, the NASA and the space industry.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
You know, the computer technology, the internet technology, the Teflon and aluminum, and I mean, there's so many things that we take for granted that came from the 60s and 70s in the space race. And that's what we're missing out on. We have nothing. We don't have that anymore. They're not doing it. You know, I mean, we don't even have the space shuttle program now.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
we are going to get drone deliveries, and that's probably coming out of the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
That can't go wrong at all.
Yeah,
no,
right.
I can't see a drone crashing into some poor person's apartment. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, I heard something about a guy that he shot a drone down that was near his house, and there was a whole legal kerfluffle about if he had to pay for it because he destroyed it, but it was on his airspace, and it's an interesting kind of brave new world that we're getting into with that too.
Well, it's just I don't have a problem with drones per se. I have a problem with them like invading your personal space. That's my problem. It coming like a drone with a camera and you know I don't know how they would knock on your door, but I guess they would. And you open it and there's a camera and you're not really camera ready, especially if you're female.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I have this neighbor and he has a drone and he like flies it around our house sometimes, and I'll like look up and like wave to it because it's like it's so weird that it's just like looking at me, and it's like it almost feels like an invasion of privacy. And
well, it is
creepy. Yeah, I don't know, don't like it.
No, it is an invasion of privacy. That's absolutely what it is. But I mean, it. Yeah, we have drones. But there's so much good stuff that could be happening right now that has been quashed. I mean, there might be stuff like you were talking about earlier. I think it was JW. Were you talking about like genetic cures for diseases?
That was Christoph.
Yeah, I had mentioned that. Yeah.
And just think of what technology because we're not doing stuff like that. That we're missing that could be instrumental in the genetic cure of diseases because they're too cheap to do something, get another platform, get another way of doing it. You know, it saddens me because of that. Now, my next question is very writer-driven, and I'm a fellow writer. Do you feel that when you're writing that you write from hope, or do you write from, I know you write from imagination, but what I'm trying to get at, do you write when you're depressed, or do you write when you're hopeful, or where does the inspiration come from? Anybody can answer that.
I can take a stab at it. I know, if I'm feeling kind of down and I try to write, I end up writing really horrible, depraved fiction. So I don't like that as much, obviously. So honestly, a lot of times if I'm going through kind of a slump, I'll read or edit something I like to write when I'm in a better mood and when I'm more optimistic, because it ends up being more fun and humorous and just more. That being said, I do tend to write things about semi dark futures. At least probably half of what I write, but I at least like to inject some hope and humor into it, and that's a lot easier when I'm feeling a little more up. So
I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I.
Oh, no, you're good.
For me, yeah, it's both. It's weird. I've actually tried to find a pattern in that before. If my dark fiction comes from being in a dark mood, and because I write a lot of humor and I write a lot of dark stuff and I write in all different genres, but it's kind of all over the place for me. But I will say that writing is definitely therapeutic. I definitely work through my issues through my fiction, and which is a good thing and a bad thing sometimes, because sometimes I want to stop writing about them. Sometimes I want to write something else, you know, other than what's bothering me. But, and that's just what comes out. But I'm not sure if it correlates with me with dark fiction or not. Sometimes I'm in a bad mood and I'll write a humor story and it'll make me feel better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Camber, as an artist, how do you feel? Do you write more in a happy mood or a dark mood? Where do you come from when you're...
Yeah, no, I personally, like, if I'm sad or whatever, like, I really can't draw at all. Like, I don't really view art as a therapeutic thing for me. It's more like when I am happy or passionate or interested, I will draw. And I don't know. For me, I can only do work when I'm, you know, happy or interested in what I'm doing. So it's never been a therapeutic thing for me, really.
It's funny because when I write something like science fiction, I have to be in a good mood. But when I'm depressed, I write poetry. You would think I was almost suicidal, read my poetry, because I just pour all my anger and problems into my poetry. Do you guys have an outlet that you use for when you're upset?
I read, honestly. I read and I run. It's not writing related, but I run and I feel better, and I read to escape feeling crappy.
Mm-hmm. I do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I like reading when I'm sad, or watching shows or anything that's entertaining and reminds me that it's, you know, fun to create things and fun to be creative.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I read a lot when something's bothering me. Sometimes I'll play music. I'll play guitar. I do that less these days, but that used to be a big outlet for me. I work out also. Same when I'm frustrated with something, I'll work out. But yeah, writing sometimes too. Sometimes I like forcing myself to write when I'm in a bad mood or when I don't want to, just because sometimes interesting things come out when I do that. It's not always enjoyable, though, so it doesn't usually last long. But.
I understand.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the show. I know it went really fast.
Wow.
'Cause I was enjoying the conversation, too. You guys are all winners. Have you gone, the big presentation is in April. Are you guys looking forward to it?
So we had our big presentation.
Yeah.
So we were the winners. So we went down in April, and we all got to do the amazing
experience. Oh, you were
experience.
Last year. Okay.
It was
like the Oscars, right?
It was fantastic. I mean, I got to meet some of my favorite writers. We got to sit in, you know, with the writers. We got to listen to Orson Scott Card and Nancy Kress and, I mean, Robert Sawyer. I mean, some of the best writers currently writing in science fiction and fantasy gave us instruction, you know, just a small group of us. And, I mean, that was, not to mention the awards event and everything. It was a pretty special experience.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I really like meeting the writers, actually. You guys are awesome. You're like,
yeah.
Really, I don't know. I really like the writers. They were all really insightful and like witty, and I don't know. I felt really drawn to them. So meeting other artists, but also the writers, was the best part for me personally.
Yeah, I think that was the best part for me, too, is meeting the people. And it, just like Crystal said, it was amazing to get instruction from this revolving door of this ridiculous list of names that were teaching us. But I think my favorite part was meeting the other people. I think I made friends there that will be friends for the rest of my life. It was an intense experience to share with a group of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was my next question. Did you guys make a lot of friends with the big group that you guys were learning with?
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Both, I think, with the writers and, like, Camber was saying with the illustrators mm-hmm. too. And then the illustrator for my story actually didn't get to make it, but yeah. just seeing my story be portrayed visually was a really, really cool thing too. And yeah.
No, I get you. My writer wasn't there, which is kind of sad because I really put in a lot of passion into the piece, but it's like, I hope they enjoyed it, you know?
That's yeah. another thing. So do you guys have anything coming up? Any stories that are being published, a book or anything that you want, or any art displays, you know, other things that you're displaying your art at? We only have like a minute, so I'm going to ask each of you individually that question so we have enough time to get everybody. JW, do you have any kind of writing things coming up that you want people to know about?
Yeah, I have a story. I don't have dates on these yet, but very soon the podcast called Cast of Wonders will be producing an audio version of a story I wrote called The Tentacles Never Lie. And also another podcast market called Starship Sofa will be producing an audio version of my Writers of the Future story, The Sun Falls Apart. So you can look for those soon.
Cool. Christoph?
Yeah, I have a reprint of my Writers of the Future story that will be coming out soon in digital science fiction. And then I have an original story that'll be out in Dead on Arrival. It's an extreme horror anthology, so one of those stories that I wrote when I was kind of in a like we were talking about, not in the best mood. And yeah, it's not for everyone. It's, you know, it's extreme horror, but that'll be out in April in Dead on Arrival. And then I have a novel that I'm doing the final edits for, and I just have it with some people, some readers that I had met, other writers at Writers of the Future who are reading it right now and offering me feedback. And then I'll be finishing that. It's called Out of the Ashes. And if anybody wants to stay apprised on any news of publication or anything, my website's christophweber.com.
Okay. And Camber?
Well, I have a blog, Camber Draws, on Tumblr, and I'm working on putting more work on there, and I'm planning on creating a comic graphic novel this year, which I'll start putting work up for, and it's going to be a sci-fi sort of weird mix of fantasy and sci-fi with weird designs, and I'll be working on that, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thank you. We've come to the end. I want to thank you guys. I hope you had a good time. And thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so
much. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.